Hey there. Welcome to this edition of the Friends Indeed podcast. I'm Rabbi Joshua Levine Grader. I'm proud to be the executive director of Friends Indeed. So we are an interfaith organization. We provide supportive services to meet basic critical needs for our homeless and at-risk neighbors, helping them to rebuild their lives. And everything we do here is about compassion, connection, and dignity, no matter what program you are getting services from. And so we're here in Pasadena, California. And this episode is what we call affectionately Stories from the Street. So while there are issues to talk about and policies to discuss and updates on our programs, I think it's always important to remember that we are talking about human beings, actual people, not statistics, not ideas, not issues, but actual people, human beings just like you and I. And so this week, I want to share a few stories, folks that we have had the chance to meet and to assist and to give them hopefully a step back into their growth, back to either housing or to a job or to a next phase of their journey. And sometimes I get a chance to talk to folks one-on-one, and sometimes I share with you the stories that we've collected from our staff who have engaged with people. Today will be mostly the latter, of me sharing stories from individuals, and then perhaps be able to get someone who will want to talk to me directly. So let me start with this story. And it is about a volunteer who came into the food pantry to report that someone had passed out in front of our Friends Indeed house. So our food pantry manager, Stacy, went to check and discovered that a man was sprawled out on one of our benches, his dog standing guard beside him. She tried to wake him up, but he was barely responsive, and so she, of course, called 911. When the paramedics arrived, they asked Friends Indeed to watch the dog until animal control could arrive. However, the dog did not cooperate. So after the paramedics refused to let the dog into the ambulance, the dog raced away up Los Robles from our food pantry, and Tim was in hot pursuit. So Tim is fast, if you've seen him run, but the dog was faster. So Tim chased it for several blocks until it ran into a driveway, followed, as luck would have it, by a car. The driver turned out to be the resident of the back house of the property and was able to confirm he knew the dog's owner and was able to notify the next of kin to look after the dog. It turned out that the poor gentleman who had collapsed was a pantry client who would come in the next day to thank us for our help. And Tim and Stacy were just glad to see him back on his feet. So the dog, first of all, knew where he lived, and thankfully, without getting injured, was able to lead Tim right to that location, because we didn't have the name or the address of the gentleman who had passed out. And so I tell you that story because A, it shows the compassion that we're able to provide, but it also shows that we are a community, that a volunteer had seen this gentleman and came to tell one of our staff, and then that person got help and was able to come back and to thank us, and that we were able to thankfully be able to provide food and the services that he had come to Friends Indeed to receive. Every day we see individuals. They're at different points in their life. They're at different stages of their needs. Perhaps it's food insecurity. Perhaps it's housing. Perhaps it's eviction prevention. And perhaps it's just a hand to hold, to share in some pain and in the suffering, and to provide a balm, if only in that moment. So let me tell you another story, a little bit of a different circumstance. This is about Robert, and Robert encountered our street outreach team. So he told us this story. He had hit hard times after his divorce. And Robert said rent was quote-unquote crazy. And even when sharing with a roommate, he just couldn't do it. Being an independently minded person, he decided to rough it. And he spent the next few years living out of his van and relying on a health club membership to keep himself clean and healthy. At first, he parked in parking lots to sleep, but eventually his cousin allowed him to park and to live in his driveway up in Altadena. It was when he was living in Pasadena that Robert first found out about Friends Indeed from driving past our building on Washington Boulevard. He started using the food pantry, at first only occasionally, but then more regularly. It wasn't until Robert was using a tax service for senior citizens, however, that someone gave him a list of resources for unhoused people, and he saw Friends Indeed on the list. He reached out to the street outreach team, met up with one of our staff, Michael, who recognized Robert as a good candidate for our motel program. After this, in Robert's words, the ball rolled fast. We moved him into a motel. He met with Najwa, our housing navigator, outreach specialist, to discuss his next steps. And it wasn't very much longer before Najwa was able to get him his own place in a bridge housing complex. Now, Robert says that being housed has given him a chance to gather himself together. He's hoping he will now have the chance to rekindle his relationship with his teenage son and maybe even have his son live with him again. Amen to that story. And one of the lessons of that story that we are taking into account here at Friends Indeed, and something that our staff is beginning to really focus on, is the integration of our services. For you see, Robert came to the food pantry, and because he didn't necessarily share that he was experiencing homelessness, that he was living in his van, because he was coming for food, and those questions aren't always asked, it wasn't until he was getting help from a different resource that he saw our name again as an agency who could help him in a different struggle in his life, that namely to get out of his van and hopefully back into housing. And so we are working really hard to make sure that we learn as much as we can about our clients and our guests, so that when we have the opportunity to offer them services in one area, we're trying to make sure we know a larger picture, a more holistic picture of what's happening in their lives. And they might not know that we offer another service that they could be making use of in their life. So we're really happy for Robert, and pray that he's doing well in his new setup. Wishing him the best. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I have a very special interview with a guest in the women's room. It has a very moving story, so I hope that you'll stick around and hear that. So this is the Friends Indeed podcast. I'm Rabbi Joshua Levine Grader. We'll be right back. So I want to give a huge shout out to new friends here in Pasadena at Agnes Restaurant and Cheesery. They hosted a wonderful event for us last month, and I just want to tell you a little about them and encourage you to visit their restaurant in Old Town Pasadena. So Agnes is owned by Vanessa and Thomas Talaka Kalb. They met while working at San Francisco's award-winning restaurant, Flower and Water. At Agnes, Vanessa is head cheese, and Thomas is executive chef. And in addition to takeout provisions in the cheesery, the restaurant menu is an evolution of family dishes reimagined, yet accessible and familiar. Well-known classic wines and other beverages at the bar. And it's located in the historic district of Green Street in Old Town Pasadena. And it's housed in the former horse stable of the Pasadena Fire Department, built in 1922. Has a wonderful design space, a large secluded outdoor patio, main dining room with an open kitchen, bar and lounge, and a takeaway cheesery with extensive bottle offerings in the front. So I encourage you to check them out. It's wonderful food and a wonderful drink and a wonderful atmosphere. So check out Agnes Cheesery and Restaurant. It's named after Thomas's maternal grandmother, Mary Agnes. So it's at 40 West Green Street, and you can check them out online at Agnes, AGNESLA.com. So we are in the women's room, and I have a regular guest with us, who we're not going to use her name, but I asked her to share some of your story, and perhaps, you know, how you found the women's room, and then perhaps what led you to needing the services of the women's room.
Okay, I went through a divorce, and I was going to nursing school, and I owned a home, and while I was in nursing school, he broke in and, you know, did all kinds of stuff. Anyway, it turned out I lost my home, okay, through foreclosure. And then I found out from a lawyer friend who called me and said, yada, yada. So then I found a shelter, found out about the San Gabriel Valley Winter Shelter. And I went there, and it's in churches, all in the San Gabriel Valley, Covina and Glendora and so on and so forth. And then from there, I've just been trying to find, you know, a stable home, and it's just impossible.
Mm-hmm. How long ago was the
when I first met Patty, so it was 5 years.
Uh-huh. 5 years ago.
Yeah.
That you had lost the home.
Oh, more than that, almost 10 years.
10 years.
And I lived with friends, and you know, I did the hospice care in the home, so I wasn't with my friends all the time, and that's what made it better. Mm-hmm. Because I would be gone for 6 months, a year. I would come home on the weekends and just kinda not be a pain. And not be like old fish after 3 days. You know, yeah. I just would make myself not, you know, a pain.
Right.
And they were cool about it because it was like when I did come, it was like, oh, okay, you know, we're going to go out to eat. We're going to movies. You know,
yeah.
It was more of instead of being there 24/7.
Yeah. So you were working as like a hospice aide?
Hospice nurse. Yeah. I did that for almost 20 years. Wow. All women, all an ex-supervisor, best friends. You name it.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how was that work? That was meaningful for you?
I think because it's a gift. And my brother used to call it my calling.
Mm.
Okay? Because I took care of my grandmother when she was ill.
Mm.
And I was only 16 and she had a massive stroke.
Mm.
But in those days, the doctors came to the houses, the nurses came. You really learned a lot. And it was just the beginning of strokes being an epidemic.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you learn a lot just by watching and you know, and it was all women.
Wow.
All women. Just one 18-year-old quadriplegic.
Mm-hmm.
And that was for about 6 months.
Are you from this area?
I was living in Covina when I owned my home.
Mm-hmm.
But I've lived in Alhambra, I've lived in Rosemead, and I've worked everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Riverside, Moreno Valley, Ontario, Upland.
Yeah.
And I would, you know, I would do the job. And then I had a friend who was in a bowling league, and they would have the tournament in Vegas, and 4 or 5 days, and I'd come back to a different job, and she'd be like, mm-hmm. How do you do it? It would always work out space wise,
mm-hmm.
which was unusual.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they would either have the situation and be in a combo or a rehab center. And then when I would get back, they would be given to the home as long as I was there.
Yeah.
Because you have to have somebody in the home,
right.
You know, and I work with a lot of great hospice groups and, you know, bathing nurses and doctors and nurses. So I really enjoyed it, you know.
So how did you find Friends Indeed in the women's room.
I was at a shelter in San Dimas, Holy Name of Mary. It's a big, huge Catholic church. Very, very together. They have a women's section, and, you know, the food was great, and they really took care of you. You could just leave your stuff there. And one of the girls said, "Do you need to do laundry?" And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "Well, let's go to the women's room." Hmm. And so she brought me here, but it was right near Christmas. And so we were sitting outside. We couldn't figure out why the door wasn't open because there was a Christmas party up the street. Hmm. So we went to the Christmas party up the street and wound up doing laundry at the laundromat later on. So it was fabulous. Mm-hmm. You know, we walked in, we got all kinds of gifts and the camaraderie and, you know, being with other women in different stages of what they're going through. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody's going through something.
Yeah.
But there needs to be more shelters just for women.
Yes.
Okay, and that seems to be a problem.
Yes.
If you don't have a mental problem or a physical problem, you just fall between the cracks. Mm-hmm. So that's what we need to work on.
Yeah. So I know I've known you for a little while coming here. And you... You had a dear friend that you were that you came with and that you spent the last 5 years kind of
taking care of.
And I'll date myself. I called you guys the like the Laverne and Shirley the women's room.
But, when I was at Holy Name of Mary, my girlfriend was a volunteer there. You know, and they would have this, you know, big huge dining room, you know, and they would serve tacos and whatnot. And then they had a little boutique. They had a little atrium area. And then they had a little boutique that you could go in and get whatever you needed. And my girlfriend said, "Well, we have this Japanese girl here with somebody from her church." And she literally came out of the hospital with no clothes. Mm. What she was wearing. So we took her to the boutique and got her clothes. And we were inseparable ever since.
Yeah.
You know, I just saw that somebody that... didn't belong there, belonged in a different type of environment. But, you know, people, I kind of got upset with the people from her church, but I think they just thought what they did was the best for her. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't want to make a judgment about it, but, you know, somebody in her condition. But, and so from that point on, and then I don't know how she found out about the women's room because she apparently had known about it before her and I connected.
Hmm.
Okay, and when I told her, you know, where I was going to go, like on set days, she said, "Oh, I've been there," and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So she had come here by herself before we even connected.
Yeah, and I remember we had an art show at the Armory, and she had some art up there.
She had I was just talking about it. She had Japanese cherry blossoms.
Yes.
And to this day, we don't know what happened.
Right.
Well, I mean, we're hoping that somebody did buy it for you know, for the auction to help the women's room. But she was so excited because we went to the Armory for the art show, and they presented it, and she just thought it was great, and then it disappeared.
Yeah.
So we're thankful that, you know, she loved this place. She loved the people. You know, she loved everybody.
And I know, sadly, she just passed away. And so just want to, you know, wish you strength and comfort.
Yeah.
And how has that been?
I mean, it's just been so hard because I'm reminded every day. And I'm running into people every day because we were inseparable. You know, very few times she went somewhere without me, but I either had to go rescue her from where she was or, you know, certain things. And I think that's the hardest because, you know, I ate differently because she was diabetic. Mm. And then after she passed, it was like I couldn't do salads. I couldn't do chicken because I had eaten so much of it. But I'm just happy to know that she's at peace.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's no longer having to do insulin. She's no longer having to watch everything she ate, you know, no longer being on medicine, you know, regular medicine. It's just hard.
Yeah.
It's not a quality of life. I mean, she just barely turned 60. She was 59 when she passed. But there was a lot of, in her family, her mom had passed in 2003, about 3 years ago at 95.
Wow.
But what happened was Patty was taking care of her mom for 10 years and then at a home in Alhambra and then started to get sick from the stress of taking care of her mom. And she would binge eat, you know, and a lot of fast food. And that's how she became diabetic. Mm-hmm. But her sister and her husband took over and they kicked Patty out and they claimed power of attorney. But that was before I met her, because that wouldn't have happened. So that's why I, you know, tried to give her the best life and that I knew how, you know, and the best love.
Yeah. And I imagine that having someone that close with you in the situation added a lot of
comfort and security.
Yeah.
Because, you know, people would see us together and they would give us food or, you know, so on and so forth. And we, you know, we pretty much had our own money, you know, here and there. But it was just hard finding a safe place.
Yeah.
You know, at the church, we felt very safe there. You know, the Methodist church in the alcove there, because the police would come by, you know, the playhouse workers that worked in the area, they would come by. There was nobody, somebody keeping a watch, you know, and so there was, you know, there were no drugs, no violence. And I heard after we left there that it got really, really bad. You know,
are you on the street right now?
No, not yet. Not yet. I'm this close. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm looking for a living job. I'm looking for a room to rent and all that. And I, you know, did all the senior centers, you know, and put everything on the bulletin board. It's just, this is the hardest time I've ever had, you know.
Yeah. And you're staying with friends?
Actually, I'm staying with friends, but her son wants to move back in, and it's just a difficult situation.
Yeah. So let me ask you the last thing. If you wanted people to know from your experience about what the women's room means to you and what it means to the other ladies, well, what would you tell people?
I would tell them, I mean, it's a place for social interaction. All your needs are provided for. If you need to take a shower, you have everything. You can do your laundry. You can do arts and crafts. You can have intelligent conversation. Mm-hmm. They have a library where you can get books from. And it's just the volunteers are spectacular, because it's women doing for women and women cooking for women. Yeah. And the meals are just great. It's just, we love it.
Yeah.
You know, it's especially with me going through this loss, I was starting to get very isolated. Mm-hmm. And I think the more isolated you get, the more mental problems you're going to create. Yeah. I mean, to walk in here and have everybody hugging you and, you know, wishing you well. Yeah.
Yeah. That's beautiful. I really appreciate you taking time to share.
Like I said, and especially when I found out that Patty had been here before, and she would say, "We got to go, you know, it's Tuesday or it's, you know, Thursday, and the ladies are going to be there." So,
yeah.
And they would watch over her for me, you know, if she was taking a nap or, you know, that gave me a little peace of mind, a little time away.
Yeah. We wish you a lot of strength and comfort on Patty's loss, and praying that you stay safe and healthy, and you know, we'll be hoping that things start to turn around for you.
It has to, because I have a guardian angel up there.
Amen.
All right.
Well, I am super grateful to be able to have had that conversation and to share it with you. I'm really grateful that this guest was willing to talk and to be so open and share her personal life and her story. So she is in her 60s, and we're hoping that with some time we'll be able to perhaps help find her a place to live. And in the meantime, she'll be able to come to the women's room whenever she wants and get the love and attention and connection that she so deserves and so needs right now in her time of mourning, her time of loss for her beloved Patty. So that's going to do it for this week, this episode of Stories from the Street. I'm Rabbi Joshua Levine Grader on the Friends Indeed podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to learn more about what we do at Friends Indeed, you can visit us at our website, friendsindeedpas.org. We're also on social media, and would love to connect with you. So stay safe, stay well, and we will see you next time. Thanks so much.